I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Today, the sporting world turns to Kauffman Stadium. After almost 40 years, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game returns to Kansas City. On today's broadcast, we look away from the diamond. With only one Royal on the All-Star roster, do KC fans really have anything to cheer about? Plus, can we draw a comparison between 1973 prospects like George Brett and Frank White and young Royals playing today? We invite your comments as we get ready to play ball and get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. It's a big day in Kansas City. It's All-Star Game Tuesday, and Kansas City is on fire with America's pastime. With the All-Star Game looming tonight, we'll spend this hour talking about all aspects of tonight's big game. We'll talk with Kauffman Stadium's executive chef and a Royals vice president. We'll also visit with some of the key players at the KC Command Center that is monitoring social media and helping visitors find their way around town. Also joining us this morning is KCUR's own sports reporter, Greg Eklund. But first up, Victor Wishna. The All-Star Game is known as the Midsummer Classic, but for all the attention it's bringing to their team's hometown, many Royals fans won't be distracted from their dreams of a World Series and a Fall Classic in Kansas City. Victor Wishna explains in this All-Star edition of A Fan's Notes.
And so, by the grace of the Major League powers that be, baseball's elite have come to Kansas City, along with thousands of other visitors and their millions of economic impact dollars. The Chamber of Commerce and the Convention and Visitors Association are rightly excited and proud. Besides blimp-eye views of Kauffman Stadium, tonight's broadcast will be chock-full of stock shots of the skyline, the plaza, the fountains, the barbecue. And Kansas City, meanwhile, gets to watch the All-Stars up close. For baseball fans, this is fantastic. But if you're a Royals fan first, it's a bit more complicated. Make no mistake, baseball is here because they dig our digs. $250 million worth of renovations will get you some attention, deservedly so. But Major League Baseball is like that guy who asks if he can throw a party at your place and then doesn't let you invite any of your friends. For the ninth year in a row, the Royals have the minimum number of All-Stars allowed. One. No disrespect to DH Billy Butler. When he gets his at-bat tonight in, let's say, the fifth or seventh inning, it will be a beautiful moment. But otherwise, what are we supposed to do? Go to Kauffman Stadium, home of our Kansas City Royals, and root for Derek Jeter? Yes, this is a celebration of Kansas City and Kansas City's own special baseball tradition, from the origins of the Negro Leagues through to the glory days and triumph of 1985. But tradition is history. And if the Royals marketing department is to be believed, this was supposed to be our time. Of course, we sports fans also love to draw inspiration from history. It's why records are kept and stats are compared. Eternal hope is the heart of sports tradition, always believing it could still happen, or even better, it could happen again. The last time the All-Star Game came to town in 1973, it also had been lured here by the promise of posh accommodations. The pre-K Royals Stadium was shiny and new then, in a 1970s twinkling light bulb and neon green astroturf kind of way. The team was new, too, and the local talk was all about prospects. That year, the rookie Frank White made his debut, and a hard-hitting third baseman named George Brett would be called up for his first handful of games. The All-Stars came and left, but within a few years, the national networks would be back and return year after year as the Royals took the division and then the league and ultimately the World Series. The truth is, these 2012 Royals have a lot more to show off than just their tricked-out stadium with its 12-story HD scoreboard. Butler is a legit all-star, an actual slugger on pace for 30-plus home runs and more than 100 RBI this season, and the first Royal all-star chosen for his bat in nearly a decade. Infielders Mike Moustakas and Alcides Escobar, along with Eric Hosmer and Alex Gordon, are drawing comparisons to that promising Royal talent of the 70s. And this past Sunday, at the All-Star Futures game, the All-Star game that matters for the future, Royals prospects accounted for 3 roster spots, more than from any other franchise. So maybe it's not cynicism, but optimism that says, hey, this All-Star game in KC is great. But we're waiting for that day, and may we see it soon, in our time, when the national spotlight again shines on the K. It won't be just an exhibition. The entire Royals team will take the field, and all the stars will be watching Kansas City. Give me a game underneath the lights. Give me the roar of the fans. Give me the sound of the big bats swinging. Give me a ring on my hand. Give me a game underneath the lights. Give me the roar of the fans. Give me the sound of the big bats swinging. The best in the land. Just throw me a fastball. Smoke from the mound. We're gonna get this thing in just one swing.
Now joining us is KCUR's own Greg Eklund, who covers sports for the station. Tonight he'll be covering, get this, his 22nd All-Star game. And Greg, so good to have you here, as always.
Glad to be here, Steve.
You know, Victor Wishner just pointed out that for the 9th year in a row, the Royals have the minimum number of All-Stars, just one player in tonight's game. What's your expectation, as Victor was mentioning, is this going to change in the years to come?
I do expect that to change. I do.
Let's hope so,
think,
right?
Yes. Well, there's always that hope. There always has been that hope for years and years. And in the years when Carlos Beltran and Jermaine Dye were here, there were hopes that during those times as well. The last time the Royals had 2 All-Stars was when Mike Sweeney and Mike McDougal were the 2 All-Stars in Chicago.
Right.
Sweeney was hurt and he couldn't play. McDougal was
Sweeney was always hurt.
And that was the problem. I mean, he was our franchise player, so to speak, but he couldn't stay on the field for a full 162 because he was getting injured so much.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike McDougal ended up just being basically a flash in the pan.
So this farm system that we have in place right now is something a little bit special.
I think it is. We haven't seen it this year. I do think that Hosmer is going to be special at first base.
Yeah.
We're seeing...
He's coming.
He's coming. We're already seeing how special this shortstop is. Mm-hmm. Alcides Escobar, we saw, can make the plays on the field. Now, to see what he's doing with his bat he is fielding, that has added so much luster to his marquee value.
And who else is coming up? Who's Will Myers guy you hear so much about?
Will Myers is tearing it up in the Triple A ball right now. He's going to be an outfielder, either center or in right. And I believe that call-up is imminent, maybe in a matter of days.
So he would take whose place then?
That's a good question. They're going to have to make some decisions in the next few days. We could see something happening in the next few days on that.
So this is how a small market club attempts to get ahead, by focusing on the farm system, which is, at the end of the day, a cheaper alternative than hiring and paying for free agent ballplayers, right?
That's right. And then the ones that you want to keep, or the ones that you want to keep off the market, off the open market, those are the ones you'll try to lock up early and make the commitment to, which they've already done.
You think these players are going to be good for 3, 4, 5 years. You don't know for sure. You gamble and you sign them for the long term and try to keep them here for a while.
That's right, because, I mean, right after Salvador Perez, who is now showing just in the short time he's been off the disabled list why he's such a special prospect at catcher.
Yeah.
He got hurt, and you're running that risk. That could happen.
You know, Victor also pointed out that Billy Butler is the first Royal All-Star chosen for his bat in nearly a decade, as opposed to being a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very good either, is it? That's kind of a daunting statistic.
No, it isn't. And I hope that bodes well for the future, too. Like with the guys we mentioned, I would think that there would be more. We haven't even talked about Mike Moustakas at third base because he's done both well on the field and at the plate, too. So I think we're going to have more hitting candidates in the next few years.
You know, baseball is such a mercurial game. I mean, last year Hosmer was the hot player. He struggled this year, although, as I said, he's coming on as this season progresses. Moustakas was the one who looked lost last season, and this year he's the one who suddenly looks like the long-term player to hang on to here.
One of the beauties of the game is behind all the little things are the adjustments the players make. I mean, in the offseason, pitchers learn about hitters, and the scouting reports are out there. It's a matter of who is adjusting to whom. They're going to be pitched a certain way. It's going to change how the hitter develops to the way he's pitched, and whether he's able to adapt to it or not. That will determine whether a player is able to stay and produce at the big league level.
You know what amazes me about baseball, and I'm digressing here just a little bit, is just, in a sense, how perfect the game is. You know, we're playing it the same way, roughly, as it was 130 years ago, and yet the balance between the pitcher and the batter, the pitchers don't dominate, the batters don't dominate, that balance has been maintained 90 feet between the bases. It's not too short, not too far. It's still hard to steal a base. I mean, it's amazing how the game has sort of held up over the decades to me.
It has gone through its cycles, and it's always going to do that. In 1968 was the year of the pitcher,
yes,
when pitching dominated, and Carl Yastrzemski won the batting title with a .301 batting average.
Yeah.
The pitching was so good that year.
Bob Gibson and
right.
He had the Tiger who pitched 30 games,
Denny McClain. Yes.
Yeah.
They made an adjustment with the mound. I believe they
lowered it.
They lowered it.
Made it a little harder.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But they made the adjustment with the mound, and then it balanced itself out again that you just mentioned.
That's just amazing. Well, how do these players in the game tonight compare with the players back in 73, which is the last time the Royals hosted an All-Star game? I mean, both the American and the National League rosters that year each boasted of 9 future Hall of Famers. How do you compare the two?
Well, I mean, I don't think that there are 9 future Hall of Famers here.
Yeah, you wonder.
But the other thing about it is that the one thing that I do not think has changed through the years, and on the surface, the first thing that comes to mind when you're looking at the ball player of today is, boy, they make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. There's nothing, you can't hide that. But I do believe that those ball players, as much today as they did in 1973, have a love for the game. I really do believe that.
Just based on your own interviews, your own time talking to them, you're saying?
By the time, we don't know. All we do is see what they do when they take the field. We don't know how early they get to the ballpark to work out. We don't know how they prepare themselves in the off season to get ready for the season.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, and it's because these ball players, especially the elite players, they love playing in the big league so much. They want to stay there, and they'll do what it takes to stay there. And so they go through, I mean, they're so well paid now, they don't need an off-season job like they did 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But by the same token, they'll take some time off in the fall after the World Series, but they're back at it in December, January, and February, getting ready for March spring training and April.
Hey, does that kind of commitment show up in the stats? Are we seeing ball players perform better today than they did 30, 40 years ago when many of them had, you know, off-season jobs?
Well, you bring up a whole different subject, and that's the subject of injuries now and the durability factor, because we're seeing injuries now maybe because they're diagnosed now as opposed to 40 years ago when nobody knew what the problem was.
Right.
And so it just seems to me that more players are sidelined by nicks that other players and that you would have thought others would have played through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the agents have changed the game a lot through the years because of certain things that could be dictated.
We're visiting with KCUR's Greg Eklund about tonight's All-Star game. So really what you're saying is these 1973 rosters, the last time Kansas City hosted this game, were pretty special. Extraordinary, even. 9 Hall of Famers on each team. Willie Mays, Johnny Bench, Pete Rose. I mean, the list back in those days really was remarkable.
You know, it's interesting that, and we've had this discussion over the last few days because of the events taking place over the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. A lot of those guys played in the Negro Leagues, and I mean, it was not like all ball clubs were signing 15 or 20 guys out of the Negro Leagues. They were signing two or three, and almost all of them were really, really good ball players. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about guys in that All-Star game, in the 1973 All-Star game, Hank Aaron played in the Negro Leagues. So did Willie Mays.
So did Willie Mays, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of those guys came, you know, Billy Williams, I believe, he came from the South. So... and Joe Morgan of the Cincinnati. I think he's an Oakland guy, but there were a lot of guys who came up that hasn't changed. And I think that's what baseball is conscious of doing now, is trying to get baseball back as the main sport for those in the inner city as well as on the outskirts.
I want to get our listeners involved here. If you want to join our conversation, has the All-Star Game lived up to the hype in your estimation? Is it worthwhile for Kansas City to host this game? How worthwhile is it? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Well, you have covered 22 All-Star Games now, going back over the years. You've seen some amazing things. Tell us about some of the moments that you recall, Greg, from having been on the field for so many of these great classics.
Well, there are a number of them, but we were talking before the show began today. One was when that impromptu gathering around Ted Williams took place at Fenway Park in 1999.
What happened? Describe it to
us. For any fan who has a chance to go to the ball game tonight, the best part of the game can be all the pomp and circumstance leading up to the game. That is really well done. I would encourage anybody who's going to the ballpark tonight, get there early, because it is a well-produced fanfare that leads up to the first pitch. Hmm. And that was part of it in Fenway in 1999. It was the last game of the century, so all these ex-ball players from the Ted Williams era had come out at that time, and Ted was getting up there in years at that time, and everybody knew about Ted Williams. I mean, he is the last guy to hit 400. That's what George Brett was challenging in 1980 when he was making a run at 400.
Right.
Nobody has done that since. So this could have been the greatest hitter, arguably, of all time.
So Ted was on the field, and people just sort of, players just gathered around him, kind of
thing? It was one of those things where everybody was in their lines, but everybody got out of their lines and just gathered around them, and they all had to get a piece of Ted. It was great. It was great to watch.
What else do you recall?
Well, my first one was 1987 in Oakland, and Kevin Seitzer was just a rookie that year.
For the Royals.
For the Royals. Mm-hmm. He was a last-minute replacement. I believe he replaced George Brett, who was injured. So he comes in. I remember dining in the morning at one of the hotels, and in walked Kevin Seitzer, and I thought, what are you doing here? And he just told me, I got named to the All-Star team. So that was a thrill for him as a rookie coming up. It was the same year that Mark McGwire was a rookie with the Oakland Athletics, and he hit 47 home runs as a rookie with the Athletics that year. So Seitzer was a little bit overshadowed by the slugging antics of Mark McGwire. But Seitzer, ironically enough, almost ended that All-Star game when a ball just shot off the bat in the ninth inning. And it looked like the American League was going to be a 1-0 winner with our local hero making it big in his rookie season in the All-Star game. But the ball died in the outfield, and it ended up just being a simple fly out. And Tim Raines ended up getting the MVP honors when the National League won the ball game. Brett Saberhagen made the start for the American League that year.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And then, of course, in 1989, when Bo Jackson golfed that shot off Rick
Ruschel. The monster home run you're talking
about. Yeah, in Anaheim. Dead center field off Rick Ruschel, San Francisco Giants at that time. Just golfed, and that ball was gone. It was like hitting it off a tee.
Yeah, so just looking at pictures and seeing Bo on TV in the last few days, in the All-Star Classic softball game, I guess, he's gained a little weight.
Yes, he is. Some of them have a propensity to do that. Once they're out of the game, they don't keep themselves. They're chasing children around.
You always remember them as they were, not as they are. But I've heard you say that he's quite the successful businessman. Bo Jackson knows business.
He does. I mean, there's one when you look at Bo Jackson, you look at him as a ball player, but he had the acumen of a good businessman, and I think he has made him successful out of his own doing in what he has done beyond baseball.
You heard him give a talk once, and he had some advice for the business crowd he was speaking to.
Yeah, it's don't give up the power of attorney. It's not something I expected to hear from an ex-ball player addressing a business crowd, but that's what Bo Jackson was saying at the time.
You know, you just wrote, had a great piece on KCUR just the other day about the All-Star game, and you were talking with a man named Bill Singer.
Yep.
Who actually was pained looking back on his time playing in the All-Star game, which happened to be the 73 All-Star game in Kansas City, Greg. Tell us about Bill Singer.
Well, Bill Singer was the guy, he was the guy who gave up the 480 home run, 480 feet to Johnny Bench, which still stands today. It was not surpassed last night in the home
run derby.
Prince
Fielder came close.
He came close, but he did not surpass the 480-foot home run that Johnny Bench hit in the 1973
All-Star. Where did it go in Kauffman Stadium?
It was pulled down the left field line, just to the right side of the foul pole, obviously. And if people remember how the stadium was before the renovations, beyond that top row, almost hit that concession stand behind the top row of the stands at that time.
Wow.
That was a shot.
That was a shot. Yeah, just a.
And Bill Singer was the guy who gave that up. And he also gave up a home run to Bobby Bonds in that game, too.
What did he say about his experience in the All-Star game looking back on it?
Well, that obviously wasn't a good one. As you mentioned, it was a pained game that he really doesn't like to look back at. He pitched in the National League for the Los Angeles Dodgers, so that was not his first All-Star game appearance. He pitched for the National League in the late 60s before he was traded over to the Angels, for whom he was representing when he was pitching for the American League. And so now he's working as a scout, so he goes to different ballparks. He doesn't come to Kansas City very often, but I knew he was not real excited about coming to Kansas City for, of all things, the All-Star game.
Hey, how did you even know to go looking for him?
Well, I knew he was here once last year. And I knew that he was the guy that gave up that homer, and I had always been interested in talking to him about that. And then when I did have a conversation about that with him, I could tell just in my conversation with him that it was not something that he fondly looked back at.
You know, it's funny because I remember the Johnny Bench home run, but I sure don't remember the name Bill Singer.
Right, exactly. And that was the point of the story. We all remember the majestic home runs, but sometimes we don't remember the pain that the pitchers go through would give them up.
So Johnny Bench hit a 480-foot home run. That's the longest home run ever hit at the K. Prince Fielder last night reached 476.
I believe so, yeah.
That isn't really an apples-to-apples comparison, though, because he's just hitting an easily thrown pitch as opposed to Johnny Bench, who was playing in an actual ball game, right?
Another one was hit by Reggie Jackson, and rest his soul, Paul Splittorff gave up that one to Reggie Jackson, I believe, and he also gave up one to Dick Allen. That was a monster shot.
What's the longest home run ever hit in the big leagues? Do you know that stat?
Wow. Well, you know, a lot of people say the Mickey Mantle shots in Yankee Stadium. But the best story I could tell you about a home run is the one that traveled the furthest. It was in Boston, because in the old when the Boston Braves had played in the ballpark there, there was a freight train that went behind the left field wall, and one ball player hit a ball so far that while a freight train was going by, it landed in the container part of the freight train, and that was traveling from Boston to New York. So that was the most traveled baseball home run ever hit.
KCUR's Greg Eklund is our guest. Let's go to some phone calls here. Has the All-Star Game lived up to its hype here in Kansas City? 816-235-2888. Let's go to Kevin from Kansas City, Missouri. Kevin, good morning.
Hi there. Good morning. Great show as usual.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. What seems so great is here's all this reverence for the game, and it's so evident, and it's almost thick with the All-Star Game, and that's great, but it seems like we've lost some kind of respect for the game and that kind of thing, and it would be great if we could get back. Well, for instance, what kills me is that the commissioner anymore seems bought, sold, paid for, and owned by the owners of the game, and so he becomes, it seems like, a representative of them, instead of doing what's always great for the game and for the fans, it would be great if we could take some of this momentum and plow it back into that.
That's an interesting observation. Is that what do you make of what Kevin just said, Greg? You know, is the commissioner looking out too much for the interests of the owners as opposed to the fans?
Well, that's what he's paid to do, but
it isn't what he used to be paid to do.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that. He's always been interested. I mean, he wouldn't have been hired by the owners if he wasn't looking after the interests of the owners. And you have to keep in mind also that Bud Selig, before he became the commissioner, came from a small market team. He owned the Milwaukee Brewers. So he has a certain empathy for the markets on this level. Now, has the disparity issue been solved? No, I don't think so. The luxury tax helps, but no, I don't think the disparity issue has been solved.
Kevin, thanks for the call. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Just a quick comment on last night's home run derby. Boy, I thought Prince Fielder of the Tigers was simply magnificent. I was home working on the show, had the TV on over the screen of my computer screen, just watching the derby. It was just amazing. What a great show that was.
It was amazing, and I'm surprised, Steve, that you mentioned Prince Fielder and you haven't said anything about Robinson Cano and Billy Butler.
Well, Robinson Cano threw up a big goose egg last night, and Butler wasn't even invited to be in the home run. Should Billy Butler have been invited?
I think so, yes.
Why? He's only hit, what, 19 home runs or something? Or
16.
16.
Only because it's been 39 years since we have had an All-Star game here.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows when we're going to have the next one?
Well, local players
should
be on it.
Last night's game was an exhibition. It's not like tonight's game where they say it counts because the winner gets the home field advantage in the World Series.
Right.
But last night's game was an exhibition. Put Billy Butler in there for the local fans. He's the closest thing to being a slugger. It's an exhibition. He belonged there.
And just to be clear, the players from the captain of each home run derby team from each league picked the players.
They have a certain number of players that they picked. And because of a conversation that Robinson Cano had with Albert Pujols, because Pujols was not an all-star, he chose to decline the invitation, recommended Mark Trumbo.
He was great last night.
There's nothing against Trumbo.
Terrific home runs.
Trumbo had some good shots there last night. But, hey, Robinson Cano deserved all the boos that he got. He is a highly professional athlete. And you know what? After the game, I listened to him talk. He was fine. He said, you know, bring it on. I'll take it. But they're used to being booed everywhere they go. But he was fine in the way he handled
it. Well, I got to tell you, just the simple act of watching a human being hit a baseball as far as Prince Fielder hit those balls last night, boy, that was breathtaking. That ball was in the air those balls were in the air for a long time.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Yeah. Well, Greg, always good to have you here. Thanks for taking some time.
Thanks, Steve.
That's KCUR's Greg Eklund. Coming up, we'll talk to the executive chef out at Kauffman Stadium and a whole lot more people about the big game tonight. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our talk yesterday with Anthony Swofford, you can find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, the media critics are back with a look at the biggest headlines in the news today. Well, today we're talking all things All-Star Game, and joining us now is Kauffman Stadium Executive Chef Aaron Washan. Aaron, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing well, and I read that you began shaping the menu for the All-Star Game in, get this, January. Help me understand that. That's more than half a year ago, Chef Aaron.
Yes. It takes a long time to plan a mega event like this, a lot of details from equipment to personnel to uniforms to obviously the food and training on that.
So 6 months ago, what kinds of things were you worried about? What were you working on in January when you first began looking ahead to the All-Star Game menu?
In January, we really looked at what we wanted to capture, what feel we wanted to give, just, you know, what we wanted to showcase. And then, you know, began making menus. After you first make menus, then you have to go through and make sure that everything that you want to do is operationally possible.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's, you know, there's revision after revision. And, you know, you take into consideration your budgets and all of that good stuff, and just keep revising until you have a menu that you're happy with and you know that you can actually execute well.
What feel did you want to give to fans who are attending tonight's All-Star Game?
We just really wanted to give a feeling of Kansas City. We know we have a lot of people in town in Kansas City, some who may not have been here before, and we're certainly known for our barbecue. And at Kauffman, we do smoke all of our own meats. So in addition to giving the Kansas City feel, it also gives us an opportunity to showcase what we do culinarily and that we do it well.
We're visiting with Kauffman Stadium Executive Chef Aaron Washan. Well, Aaron, how much meat are you smoking then for tonight's All-Star Game? I'm afraid to ask.
Just for tonight, easily 2,500 pounds for tonight. We have two Southern Pride smokers in our outfield.
2,500 pounds?
Yes. We smoke turkey, of course, brisket, pork butts, hams, chickens, etc.
How do you smoke 2,500 pounds of meat?
It's a lot of work. It's a matter of just loading those ovens and cranking it and keeping it rolling. Keep it all fresh and good and ready in time for our fans.
But barbecue isn't the only thing you're serving tonight that might catch people's attention. What else do you have on the menu?
We have a lot of different things. We have in our concessions areas, we have KC Cantina, that's a taco truck that we actually have in our outfield. We've got an urban walk concept, a lot of different takes on hot dogs, different takes on nachos. Of course, we have in our club and suites areas, we've got a lot of items like some little gourmet dessert cones and some different chilled shrimps and chocolate pot au creme, a whole lot of different specialty items, some different sliders, that kind of thing. So it runs the gamut. We're very fortunate we get to do a lot of different types of food.
How many folks do you have working right now to prepare all that food?
Working right now, we have in our premium areas, we have about 100, 115. And in our concessions areas tonight, we'll have about 450.
What time did your day begin today, Aaron?
It started at about, well, probably about 5 a.m., ended at about 2:30 a.m. last night. So just a little nap, and we're rolling. It's sheer adrenaline at this point.
I think a lot of folks at the K today are probably operating on not a whole lot of sleep. Am I right about that?
Yes, you are right. Well, no sleep, but plenty of excitement.
What's your personal favorite food that you're preparing out there?
My personal favorite food, I really like the avocado tacos that we have at our KC Cantina.
That sounds good.
It's a fresh seasonal thing. Although I'm typically a meat eater, I just love those. They're tempura battered avocado and with a relish and like a vegetable relish. They're great.
How did you get the job as the executive chef out at the K? How did that happen?
Actually, it's just kind of a long story, but interesting. You know, my career has just kind of taken a different path. I've been about 2 years ago came on with the Chiefs doing their team feeding with Aramark and the Arrowhead Stadium concessions areas, and then I added Kauffman this January. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, a good time to come over.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you. I don't want to keep you away from your duties today, or you'll have a lot of angry customers tonight.
Right.
You're so kind to take some time with us today, Aaron. I sure appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. We look forward to seeing you guys out here.
Good luck tonight, okay?
Thanks.
That's Kauffman Stadium Executive Chef Aaron Washan. Let's go to some phone calls here and go to Barbara from Overland Park. Barbara, good morning. Nice to have you.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a courier, and I was downtown Kansas City around Bartle Hall and going down 12th Street, and it was just so exciting to see those sidewalks so full of people. It was just a tribute to the fans and the guests that have come from all over to watch the game and get into the festivities. It was just gorgeous to see it. It was just very exciting. I got excited, and I'm not even going to the game.
Well, I'm excited, too. I think the old town looks pretty good, Barbara. I agree with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you go down 12th Street, you go by the fountains, and the fountains are all just blue. I mean, it was just beautiful.
Well, I took
and
my,
all the people that were crowded around, it was exciting.
I took my 14-year-old to FanFest on Saturday, and we drove by the Marriott with the blue water on Barney Ellis Plaza. And my 14-year-old and his buddies were like, "See the water? It's blue. Can you believe it? It's just incredible." They were just undone by that. Whatever. It's blue. It was fun. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Barbara.
All right. Thanks for taking it.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking all things All-Star Game for tonight's big game here in Kansas City. And joining me now is Toby Cook. He's the Vice President of Community Affairs and Publicity for the Royals. And Toby, so good to have you here.
It's great to be here, Steve. It just seems like yesterday you were out for opening day.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And you aren't operating on a whole lot of sleep, I'm guessing.
No, I tried to get a little more rest than some people. I was pacing myself because we literally could have worked from 4 in the morning, as Aaron was saying, 4 in the morning until 1 in the morning, and it wasn't going to work for weeks on end. Our biggest push in my department was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of this past week, and believe it or not, Monday and Tuesday have kind of eased up a little bit because I'm not in total control of the in-stadium ballpark events, so I actually got to enjoy the last two nights, but it's been very, very busy.
Hey, what are you doing as a community affairs vice president? What's your job?
The way that I describe it is I get paid to do nice things for people on behalf of the Glass family, our ownership, and a Major League Baseball team. Mm-hmm. We have programs all year long that involve kids, that involve cancer research, that involve practically every not-for-profit group that you can think of in a 30-mile radius of Kauffman Stadium. So we raise money through a lot of events that we do, and then we give it away. We have programs like a blood drive that we're doing next week in town where we bring a player down, and we'll give free tickets to people that give a pint of blood. Activities all throughout the year. And Major League Baseball has a fair amount of activities that they institute in all 30 stadiums around that we kind of facilitate. So the good stuff, the community affairs part, is all the good stuff that we do in and for the community. And then the publicity part is just making sure that people know the stuff that we're doing.
Well, Toby, the good news is, despite the lack of sleep, you're still coherent. You're still stringing them together pretty well.
Yeah, I had to rehearse this in the car when I'm rehearsing my answers. It wasn't going very well. So,
you know, one aspect of all of this All-Star stuff that I think has been overlooked a little bit is there's a whole lot of charity work going on behalf of Major League Baseball and the Royals for this community that I think a lot of folks should be aware of. Tell us what's going on.
Well, you mentioned 1973, or I think Greg Eklund did, the first All-Star at then Royal Stadium, the year that it opened. And back then, they flew in, they had a lunch with the commissioner, they had a workout, they played the game, and they flew out. Over the course of time, especially since about 89 to 90, Major League Baseball has really increased this to an All-Star week. And then about 10 years ago, they established what they call the Lasting Legacy Program, which means that because All-Star came to town in a particular market, it left behind a lasting legacy. A portion of last night's proceeds of the Home Run Derby, a significant portion, are being given to national partners with Major League Baseball, but about $2 million is being left behind in legacy projects in Kansas City. We just left Mulkey Square Park, which is a little baseball field across the street from the FBI headquarters up at 13th and Summit, overlooking Kansas City.
Wow.
And it was you wouldn't know about that field unless you lived in the West Side or the Guadalupe Center area. We've spent a couple of $100,000 with Major League Baseball in renovating that field, and now it looks like a Major League park for kids that are 8 to 12 to 14 years old that are going to be playing on it. So we renovated two youth fields. The other was Satchel Paige. We funded an exhibit at the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, renovated Operation Breakthrough, the inner city child care facility downtown. The Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kansas City had a what they called the Leslie Unit, which was on Leslie Street in Independence. It was in disrepair, and they couldn't have as many children as they wanted in the Boys and Girls Club unit because it didn't meet to code. So they had to keep it to a certain amount. Now they have double the amount of kids that they can service because we completely redid that unit. So all in all, $2 million, maybe even more, left behind just in community dollars because of All-Star and the Home Run Derby last night. One thing that I always like to point out in talking to people about these legacy dollars, we're also donating about $250,000 in scholarships. And the point of the lasting legacy is you go by that Boys and Girls Club or those fields and you say, that happened because the All-Star game came to Kansas City in 2012. You could almost say for these youngsters who are getting these scholarships, you know,
I got to go to college in part anyway because the All-Star Game came to Kansas City.
So 10, 15, even 20 years from now, people will look back and say the All-Star Game in this town made a difference.
Absolutely. I've been asked about the economic impact. I don't know what it is because I've only heard estimates. They're saying somewhere in the $60 to $70 million range. And that's obviously the hotels and the bars and the restaurants and maybe the mom and pops making money because the visitors are here. But I think that's going to, of course, make a huge difference for Kansas City for years to come. This legacy project will make almost as much difference in a $2 million package just because it's affected lives.
We're visiting with Toby Cook, who's a vice president of community affairs with the Royals. You know, Toby, what's been the biggest challenge of staging this All-Star game? What's been the biggest hurdle to get over for the team, the franchise, and for Kansas City, do you think?
I think, too, the one specific is transportation because, it admittedly, the way that we're set up in Kansas City, the area that is kind of the core Major League Baseball activity, the hub, is downtown at the Barney Ellis Plaza, Fan Fest, the downtown Marriott, and all those hotels. We've got a lot of activity going on at the Country Club Plaza. In fact, in just a little while, at 1 o'clock this afternoon, the red carpet parade takes place. If you're in the area, that's going to be a fabulous thing, by the way. It's basically going to see the Plaza lights, except that you line the street and watch a bunch of baseball players come by on pickup trucks. And then, we've got Truman Sports Complex, which is several miles away to the east. So being able to coordinate all of that in three different places is not the easiest thing. The Cardinals in St. Louis had it good a few years ago because everything was right there. Phoenix had it good last year because everything was right there, although it was blasted hot.
Don't get me started on the downtown ballpark thing, Toby. Should have done it. I've been saying it for years.
Well, and I walked right into that a couple of weeks ago because I went and spoke to the downtowners, the group, and I was so busy that I had it on one calendar but not another, and at 11:30 that morning I realized I was supposed to be speaking to the downtowners, and I called the guy and I said, I'm sorry, I'm going to be there. I'm not dressed exactly the way that I would have, but I didn't get it on the other calendar. Luckily, I had a Royals Charities golf shirt, and I kind of massaged it and said that we're doing our broadcast auction tonight, and that's why I'm wearing this. So I'm talking about all these things, and then I finally say, when they ask me about this question, I say, so I guess that, you know, my friends who advocated a downtown stadium make a good point, and I got this huge round of applause, and I walked right into that one. But it, you know, it is what it is. We renovated the stadium in 2009. It looks great. That's probably been the biggest challenge. And the other thing is that you've got multiple organizations that are trying to do this huge thing. Kansas City, Missouri, Jackson County, Major League Baseball, the Royals, and anybody else who wants to get involved in it. So the coordination is difficult, but we've pulled it off.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of VIPs who are in town. I mean, you know, all the stars who were in the softball game the other night. Drop some names for us. Who's in town?
John Hamm. I bring him up because my wife constantly says, "Did you see John Hamm today?"
Yeah. Mad Men.
From
right?
Mad Men.
Yeah.
Bo Jackson, who got the biggest round of applause at the celebrity softball game the other night.
Yeah. It's amazing that the affinity this town feels for Bo Jackson. It is amazing.
It's unbelievable. He was at opening day a year ago, and there's just a different buzz when Bo comes into the stadium than anybody else. It's really, really interesting. And mm-hmm. I got to talk to him, meet him very briefly, and you know, he's a very normal guy. He just has something about him. You know, he came up in the celebrity softball game. There were two outs in the bottom of the sixth. It was a shortened sixth inning exhibition with these stars. The American League and the National League were playing, and they mixed the celebrities and the ball players. And he didn't want to play. He was the manager of the American League team. But the crowd, somebody yelled Bo, then somebody else yelled Bo, and then pretty soon you have 40,000 people, Bo, Bo. And he got up and he took a swing and popped it up to left field. And I think that's why he didn't want to do it. But,
yeah, you could live up to the hype.
But,
yeah.
You know, the commissioner of baseball is here, and he's obviously a big deal.
He's finally visited the Negro Leagues Museum.
He did that on Monday. And I don't know the history of when he's been in town where, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. But that was a huge deal for him to go.
It took too long.
Yeah, it probably did. He went with the chairman, David Glass, our owner, and Dan Glass, the president. And, you know, he's been told so much about it, it was just really good for him to be able to see it.
You know, you just think, talking about legacies of the All-Star Game lasting 10, 15 years down the road, you wonder what the legacy of this game is going to mean for the Negro Leagues Museum. I know you're not here representing them, but you just wonder how that's going to play out in the years to come.
Well, I'm happy to say something about it because Bob Kendrick is a dear friend of mine.
Great guy.
And we have the Buck O'Neill Legacy Seat 81 games where somebody that's done something really cool in the community,
yeah,
usually and not a name, somebody that you wouldn't recognize. Mm-hmm. We've had celebrities in there occasionally, but it's usually somebody that's just done a tremendous amount of volunteer work. And we honor somebody in Buck's name every single game. We were on Sunday morning after our 5K downtown over at the Negro Leagues. It was my third time there in 3 days because there were a couple of events on Friday and Saturday. People have asked me, who do you think is going to benefit the most from the All-Star game coming to town from a facility standpoint? And I said, of course, obviously, hotels, bars, restaurants, et cetera, maybe the mom-and-pop grocery stores. But it would be great if, as a result of All-Star, that the country finally gets to know the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, yeah, and that we put, yeah, them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
They've struggled for 20 years. It's a hard thing to have somebody come. When you go there, you're impressed by it, but you think, well, I've already seen it. I don't need to see it again. Or we're just not getting the word out even to the Kansas Cityans about it. And there's going to be a significant part of the pregame show tonight surrounding the Negro Leagues, and we certainly hope that that's going to be a result.
And the players themselves need to go there and see it.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
And unfortunately, they do, but it flies under the radar, and we need to do a better job of highlighting every time that a Major League Baseball player goes through. You talk about name-dropping. When you ask Bob Kendrick who's been there, it's a pretty impressive list, but not a lot of us know that they do that. So that's something that we need to do in the future.
Have you had a chance to mingle with Hank Aaron and the likes of the sort of the mega stars who are here?
Not a lot. I did get to talk to Prince Fielder yesterday, which,
wow,
was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And Frank Robinson, who actually works for Major League Baseball in a consulting role, was at this event yesterday. I find myself a lot of times just on the peripheral, just running around making sure the event actually happens rather than getting to talk to them. I will say that it's been a kick. And, you know, I grew up in Southeast Kansas. My dad took me to my first Royals game in 1976. That was an awfully good time to be a Royals fan when you're 8 years old because,
yeah,
they won for the next 10 years. And I'm like a lot of kids growing up in the Midwest. George Brett was my favorite player, and I've gotten to know George now through this job. But I've spent Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and this morning every day seeing George as the Major League Baseball ambassador at these events. You know, we're not only giving this money away, but we're having these news conferences where,
yeah,
Dan and David Glass and George are going to every single one of them. He has been phenomenal, and you know, George and I aren't friends, we're acquaintances, but it's been a kick to spend a little bit of time with the greatest Royal.
He's working hard right now, isn't he?
No doubt. Yeah.
Well, Toby, it's been great to have you. Thanks for coming in, and good luck getting through tonight, and then take a break.
Thanks.
Can you take a break?
Yes. I've got July 11th circled on my calendar. We'll go for an American League win, and then I'll take a nap.
That's Toby Cook. He's Vice President of Community Affairs and Publicity for the Royals. Hey, Toby, great to have you. All the best. Yeah. Well, for the first time at any All-Star game, Kansas City is operating a social media command center. The purpose, the idea, is to let people have a good experience in Kansas City and stay in touch with them while they're here and answer their questions. With us to talk about it is Derek Kloss. He's with the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association. Derek, good morning. And Laura Watkins is also here. She's a social media strategist at Barclay. Laura, good morning to you, too.
Morning, Steve.
Is Derek there? We'll get Derek on in just a minute. Well, Laura, tell us, why is Kansas City doing this? What's behind all that?
Well, we just wanted to get together. This has been a joint effort between H&R Block, the Kansas City Convention and Visitors Association, the Social Media Club of Kansas City, the mayor's office, and Barclay to monitor conversations and just aid visitors as they come to visit the city for the All-Star Game week. So we're just – oh, go ahead.
Well, how many folks do you have manning this command center?
Oh, we've had about 40 volunteers.
Yeah, and how did you try – are they working around the clock?
Yes. Well, we've been here – today we opened at 8. Every day we're opening between 7 and 8 in the morning and closing somewhere around 11 p.m. and midnight. So we're pretty much up all day answering questions about the city and giving great advice, you know, about restaurants to visit and attractions to see and transportation and ways to get to the K.
So I've got to ask, now, what kinds of questions have you been getting at the Kansas City at the command center?
Well, you know, one of the biggest questions is, what's your favorite barbecue restaurant? And everyone here has a different opinion, so we kind of fight over it like children. I'm sorry?
Do you offer opinions when you're asked for an opinion?
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that Visit KC really wanted us to do was let the volunteers, you know, give their opinion. So some people are going to answer Gates, some will answer Oklahoma Joe's, some will say Bryant's, and so on.
And what else you've been asked?
Parking. How much is parking at the K? How can I get to the K from downtown? A lot of people are asking about the parade that starts at 1 on the plaza today. Different, you know, questions about exhibits, Negro League Museum exhibits, the museums, World War One, and the Nelson. So we're just offering a lot of information about that.
Is it your sense that this social media command center idea is working? Are people taking advantage of it? Is this sort of the future of what the convention business is going to be?
Actually, Derek, I believe, is on the line and can answer that.
Go ahead, Derek. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. What was the question one more time? Sorry.
I'm just wondering if this social media command center is truly sort of the future of the convention business, and to what extent people are actually taking advantage of this opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily for the convention business, but definitely from the visitor experience. We're hoping that we can replicate this experience for major future events that we're hosting here in Kansas City, hopefully on some scale, whether it's smaller or a little bit different, at least for Restaurant Week, for the Big 12 Basketball Week. We really want to continue this monumental success we're achieving and kind of, you know, maximize on that potential.
So, Derek, you're saying enough people have written the center, have commented that it's worthwhile to continue this thing.
Yes, yes. We're receiving fantastic traffic. I don't know if Laura told you some of the numbers.
No, give me some numbers.
As of this morning, we received how many, Laura? 20,000 tweets, and we've responded to about a fraction of those.
Oh, that's amazing.
2,000. So we've been doing a lot of listening and interjecting when it makes sense and when it's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, Derek, listen, thanks for joining us, and good luck at the Kansas City Command Center. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you very much, and I wanted to make sure that your listeners know that if they have any questions, they can use hashtag KC or use Twitter at VisitKC.
Laura Watkins, thank you for your time as well. Good to have you both here. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow, the media critics are in studio, plus a look at politics in the workplace. Today's show was produced by Danny Alexander. Our show's senior producer is Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.